Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchie. Jacob is here. We are on the evening of heading down to San Jose for Crunchyroll Expo this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
This episode will be up on Friday. You can see us this weekend on a couple of times. Saturday at 11 a.m. Jacob, you're host. Well, you're not hosting. You're being interviewed for some kind
of... Yeah, I'm a guest on a panel about anime editorial, about the work that I do, basically.
All right.
And that you do.
And that I do. Mm-hmm. I will be on the CRX chat stage being interviewed, I guess, by someone about my career and about, like, the, you know, 20 years of being an anime fan, I guess. That's at 3 p.m.,
mine is at 11.
Yours is at 11, and then you'll have to miss mine if you want to see Jacob again, who's you'll be hosting the LGBT panel at 2:30 on Saturday. That's all Saturday, so you'll have to make the difficult, not at all difficult, go see Jacob's LGBT panel.
It's going to be, if you were there for the AX1, it's going to be everybody's different except me. So, yeah, a whole slate of different people. It's going to be similar format, though, and yeah, should be fun.
All right, yeah, and yeah, you'll see us all around that show all weekend. We'll be running around. I'm excited. I'm interviewing the crew from Battle Angel, so I'm writing interview questions for
that. Is exciting.
Robert Rodriguez right now. It's cool. I'm excited to see what they present, even though I can't be there for it because it's scheduled opposite my panel.
Well,
I got someone covering it for us, though, so we'll have a report afterward anyway. So yeah, we're getting ready for that, writing questions, packing stuff up. I thought we would just do a quick mailbag show this time. We got some emails to catch up on, and then we have some Twitter questions. Just a few emails from over the summer. Let's see here. Okay, all right, let's just dive right in. Just head first.
Mm-hmm.
Caution to the wind. Straight to the questions. I am in no way stalling.
The gloves are coming off.
Yeah. I don't know why. We're just answering questions.
Yeah, as I say.
All right.
Fight for our lives.
These are some ones that came in over email over the last couple months. Have you ever been to the big Anisong events at Anime Expo? I think Zach has talked about it before, but I was thinking of going to Anime Expo next year, and I was wondering if they were worth it. I mean, I have and you have.
Yes.
So, I mean, in my opinion, now, you should take this with a grain of salt because I've never paid for tickets. I've never had to wait in line. I've never had to, like, my tickets are comp to those things because we cover them for Anime News Network. Like, we're at work while we're there. If I were a fan, I feel like I can put myself in the headspace of someone who's like, I'm just here because I'm really into this. Mm-hmm. I don't see, if you were into idols, I don't see how there's anything better. Like, what would you get that's better than that in the U.S.? Like, if you're not willing to go to Japan, or if you can't go to Japan for whatever reason, it seems like that's the next best thing, because the show's very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought it was like, holy shit. Like, this must be pretty much what it's like, seeing one of these live events in Japan. Yeah, I was totally like, holy cow. Like, impressed with the whole thing, like, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And thought that it was, if you're into it, it's like, yeah, totally amazing. If not, I don't know. Why would you consider it, I guess?
Yeah, if you're on the fence, I will say, if you're talking about Anime Expo specifically, it's either going to be at the hall in the convention center, or more likely it's going to be the Microsoft Theater, a slight walk from the convention center. And they don't have a lot of... I'm saying this is like the only negative. There isn't a whole lot to the stage show. There isn't like a lot of dynamism or like cool blocking or special effects or anything like that. And as far as concerts go, it's a little minimalist. You're there to see the acts and that's about it. And they're backup dancers, I guess. But like, but if it's an act that you like, then you should absolutely go see it. they, you know, it's a fairly intimate venue, and they have them up on the screen if you did get seats that are further back. So I would say if it's an act that you really care about, then paying the $50 to $80 or so is worth it. If not, if you're just like, oh, I want to go for the novelty or to see some anime music, if it's not your kind of anime music, I wouldn't say it's necessarily worth the investment. But yeah,
if it is, though, you should really go
because there's not a lot of opportunities to see these performers over here. So yeah.
So I've only seen the idols. What? I've never seen just the anime song, like regular. What is it? Regular and.
They're just pop singers. Yeah.
Just pop, like the pop. There's like, but the thing is, you can
see. They split it up into days.
So you can call idols. The idol one the idol one, mm-hmm. But what do you call the other one?
Just J-pop, you know.
It's just pop music.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so it's singers, I've never seen.
You know, the emphasis was.
I've never seen the singer-songwriter one.
Yes, the emphasis was singer-songwriter specifically because the way they split it up, it was idols, it was Love Live, and then it was this year. And then it was like idol-like performers where they have more of a production behind them. They don't like write their own music necessarily. And then the night that I went to, which was specifically singer-songwriters, so like Sayuri and Aimee and all those folks, main, but sort of write their own stuff to a great extent. And certainly Yuki Kajira, duh, of course, writes her own stuff. So, you know, I would say find what performer you're most excited to see and then step out on that one and you will have a good time.
I will say that for the idol stuff, It is really loud.
So I wanted to, like, I'm not a fan of the idol stuff. I was there for the Love Live concert, and I could really appreciate the...
Well, you like some idol music.
Very little. I like the Wake Up Girls. I like... I think the Utapri boys are pretty talented because a lot of those are just working
voice
actors.
That's two whole bands that you will listen to.
But I don't go out of my way to listen to either of them. I will go out of my way to listen to all of Aimee's
albums. Out of your way? Like you'll drive 50 miles?
No. I mean like I will voluntarily queue up an album and listen to it instead of like, oh, well, this was in shuffle and I don't dislike it. But like if I'm using the AniUta streaming service right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, sometimes I'll like shuffle all and just shuffle what's new and stuff like that. And when it hits a Love Live song, with rare exception, I like Guilty Kiss, the self-named, song from the Guilty Kiss unit of Love Live Sunshine. I like, some of the Azalea, subunit songs, but for the most part, if it's Love Live, I'll skip it because I just don't. It's not good on my ears. I don't like it. But if it's Wake Up Girls, I'll listen to it. So it just depends. It depends on the song and the group. But my point was, I went to go see Love Live Sunshine, and it was ear splitting. I could really appreciate the effort and the time and attention and the emotion that was in the show, but it hurt. It hurt to listen to. It was. Has anybody ever seen, this is sort of a weird niche reference, but if anybody's ever seen the Adventures of Tintin film, there's a scene wherein Captain Haddock, who's like the goofy sidekick character in that movie, is having to listen to it like an opera singer sing, and he's just like rolling around on the ground. He grabs a tablecloth and like rolls around in it because it's just too piercing to his ears. That was me at Love Live Sunshine. It's just a certain pitch that like, it's just a certain pitch that makes me flinch and sort of like whine like a dog or something like that. It's just unpleasant.
Yeah, I wouldn't maybe catch it in those terms, but I think I just got... like, in the beginning, it was fine, but after a while, and it's kind of a long show, after a while, I was like, okay, my ears are hurting. Like, the pitch at which they hit is nuts. And, like, I was there for, like, Warukure, and, like, I saw the Wake Up Girls and, like, a bunch of different bands, and towards the end, my ears were pretty split. It was tough. But if you're there for that, if you're into it, I would imagine... even if you're into it, I would imagine it might be a little much because it's so loud. But
on the flip side, the singer-songwriter night, Sayuri put on an amazing show, and she was this was her first time performing in the U.S. and she was also the only performer who did not know English had not practiced. I'm sure you know. I think two out of four of them knew some English, and then I believe Main and Yuki Kajira like rehearsed some phrases ahead of time. And Sayuri just didn't know anything, so she was just speaking in Japanese and kind of hoping that some people in the audience knew what she was saying. And that was, it was really, really like charming. And she really put her all into the performance. She was performing on guitar while singing the whole time, with her hair in her face because that's her thing. And it was really good. It was really powerful, and Aimee did an amazing job. She had the song at the end of After the Rain was the strongest, I think, of the whole set, because everybody had their wands turned to, like, gold, and they were waving kind of in perfect unison, and she was really into the song. It was a very strong moment. So, you know, it just depends. I would say go to a concert that has a performer you really like at it, and then you will have a great time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But those are, like, world-class events. Like, you're not going to see those performers really anywhere else outside of Japan, especially all in one place like that. So, yeah, if you're into that music, I don't know why you wouldn't. If you can, if you're into that music and you're thinking about going and you're like, I think I might take that vacation, it's probably worth your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say so. All right. Okay, moving on. Next email question. There's a couple big, well, a few film premieres this fall. I wanted to know, are you looking forward to any of them? The My Hero Academia movie, the second Fate. Well, let's take these one at a time. The My Hero Academia movie, sure. But it's like a jump movie, right?
I'm looking forward to seeing really good animation in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, it will definitely be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to try to see that at like a packed screening full of fans. Like, as many fans, whatever the busiest possible screening I can find is, I think I'll try and see it there. Because it's the most fun to see that kind of thing where people are going to just get fucking rowdy at all the characters. Like, you want, like, the rowdy audience for something like that.
Definitely.
Every time a new character shows up on screen that anyone recognizes, you want them to go crazy. Because then, like, it improves the film, in my opinion. It makes it so much more fun to watch the movie that way. For Fate, well,
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, the animation's probably going to be beautiful.
I enjoyed watching the first one. It's just that it was enjoyable in a sort of frustrating way. Look, my brain was always on, and that's what I care about, is that I'm always engaging with what I'm watching. And so I'm definitely going to be doing that for Heaven's Feel. So yeah, bring it on. I can't, you know what? And I am excited to see what they're going to do about the porn plot parts of that story, because I interviewed the guy about it. I was like, well, this isn't like the other two routes where it's easy to take out the porn and just, like, the porn does feel like it's just perfunctory and it's easy to just sponge it out. You're going to have to write something new to make up for it. It's really hard to,
like,
sponge this out.
Smash cut to you and me sitting in the Ace Theater, the Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles at the premiere of the second movie. Mm-hmm. And, like, you can see the light of the screen on our faces, and you just hear, like, fucking straight up hentai sounds coming from the screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the audience is going, what? Like,
yep. And I look at you, and you look at me, and we just shrug. And
yep, just a few months from now.
My guess is it's going to be vampirism with fan service. My guess is they went the, like, her horniness is now a blood-sucking type of thing.
Oh,
and they're
just
going to camera on her ass while she sucks his blood or something.
Sure. Yeah, you know what? That's a good prediction. Let's put it in the vault.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll reopen that vault after we see the film and see if you were correct about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good prediction. I feel like that's a solid take. I'm curious to see where it goes. That is the Fate, what is this called? The
Heaven's Feel?
Heaven's Feel.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. Heaven's Feel. It is a little Garden of Sinners-y for me. Like, it's really slow.
Mm-hmm.
And takes a long time to get to the point. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of redundant conversations. And scenes are held for a really long time. And it kind of puts me to sleep a little bit. And I just sit there thinking, like, you know, it was good. Fate Zero. That was a good show.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious to see where the story goes. Like, I want it's that Garden of Sinners thing. You want to know what's going to happen. It's still very compelling.
Uh-huh.
But I wouldn't say I'm excited. It's just a thing I'll do eventually.
I'm stoked for all of it, I would say. I think I'm in a mood right now where I'm like, I want to watch new movies, so that sounds good.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Yeah, I mean, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, yeah, sure, let's do it. So, yeah, I guess I'm into it. All right. Mamoru Hosoda's new film, Mirai.
All right, so that of the three, I guess, is the one I'm the least. I really didn't like The Boy and the Beast. I actively quite disliked The Boy and the Beast. And
I think we've been over this, I think, a couple times on the show. Like, you and I are both pretty, well, I might be a little bit more down on Hosoda than you are.
Well, no, yeah, as of Wolf Children, I was like, I had issues with the movie, Wolf Children, but I wasn't like, I'm not interested in Hosoda's output right now. Boy and the Beast broke me. It was like, all right, I need a break from this guy's aesthetic. And so, like, I will see Mirai. I hope it's good. People have said that it's more informed by experience than Boy and the Beast was, because, like, he has a kid now, and it's just kind of about the age of the kid that his is. So that's good, but I just, you know, I don't have strong
It's
feelings.
Like older brother encounters younger sister, but as a teenager, right? Or something like that.
He's like four, and he meets... but apparently that's not a whole lot of the movie. That's the pitch, but it's not actually very much of the film, according to our review by Kim Morrissey. Mm-hmm. So,
We have a review of this on the site, by the way. It came out in Japan already.
Yeah, it's mostly, as far as I understand, it is mostly, like, slice of life / imagination of this 3 to 4 year old boy. But, like, at some point in his story, he meets a version of his baby sister from the future who's, like, 14 or something now. Okay, like, I'll watch it, but Boy and the Beast really soured me on Hosoda, so he's got to make up some goodwill with me, I guess.
So we had perfect mom, then we had perfect dad, and now do we have perfect sibling? Is that what it is? I wonder?
I mean, his idea of perfect dad was pretty fucked up, so I don't really,
That was definitely...
That was not a perfect dad by any stretch of the imagination.
You know what I mean, though.
Yeah.
Like, my ideal father figure.
Yeah, I don't know what's gonna happen there. At least,
glowing memories of Pops, even though it was rough sometimes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Wolf Children was definitely perfect mom.
Mm-hmm.
His glowing opinion of family relations, we'll see if he can. That's the road he's still going down. I would say I am not not excited, but am curious to see it anyway. Of course, I'm curious. Like, I'll probably wind up seeing everything that guy makes, but. Wouldn't put myself in the box with the fans, you know what I'm saying?
Right. It's like, it's of the three mentioned so far, it's the one that I'm most like, rental, like wait till rental or whatever, but like I'm sure I'll see whenever it is convenient or needs to be covered or whatever the case may be, but it's the one I'm the least excited for, I think.
There's a Simpsons quote, I think, where a character says something along the lines, something dismissive along the lines of, I'm aware of his work.
And oh, God.
And that's kind of that's a little bit more my attitude towards Hosoda. I'm aware of his films.
I like Summer Wars. I think I'll always like Summer Wars, but...
Yeah, and I'm, like, super blasé about Summer Wars. Mm-hmm. I'm just not into it. I'm excited to see all three of those in the theater, and it's cool that there's, like, three movies, and probably... not just that, there's probably one or a couple I'm missing here. Yeah, more than likely. Let's see here. So, next email question. Are either of you... Oh, well, this is kind of timely. Are either of you watching Happy Sugar Life? I don't like the show, but I can't look away.
Yeah, I mean, I'm watching it. I don't have strong...
Today's This Week in Anime
yes.
is about the show, mm-hmm. right?
Right. Or yesterday's, if you're listening to this now.
Yeah.
And I don't have strong feelings on it, weirdly. When something is so baldly... I guess when something is so baldly dark and it's not, I feel more strongly about this stuff, and I feel more like, oh, fuck you, when this stuff is like, say, I keep going back to this well, I don't know why it keeps rising from the ether, I haven't watched it in forever, but Cross Ainge is a good
spectre. I feel
like
this is like the 10th time you've brought up Cross
Ainge. It is, I really haven't seen it in forever, but it's just an easy, I think it's like easy poster child for like... trash that tries to be about something, and it's like, why bother? This is garbage. Like, why try to be like, oh, it's a serious show, it's thoughtful. No, it isn't. What are you talking about? Like, the most trans the most transparent failure to be serious. Happy Sugar Life isn't like that, so I think that the trash becomes offensive to me when it is like saying like, oh, this is a serious show or whatever, and it's just like this gross, mean, nasty, basic sort of like 12-year-old boy anger. And I don't so Happy Sugar Life isn't that. It's just meant to be shocking and weird, seemingly to no end. But it's not, when I say shocking, weird, seemingly to no end, it's not like Magical Girl Sight from last season where it's like it's uncomfortable to look at because you don't see, they purposefully don't show you anything gory, gross, uncomfortable. They don't like show you somebody's like drool as they like salivate over like a teenager. They don't show you the teenager jabbing out a guy's eyes with a poker. All this stuff happens, but you don't really see it. And because you don't really see it, it's not like, ooh, shocking. It's just like, this weird pastiche of mentally unstable people. It's like, what if the world was full of nothing but like secretly insane people? So it's this like weird fever dream. And I don't really know where it's going with that, but it's not upsetting or off-putting to watch. It's just sort of there, and it's compelling, and it's constantly throwing new psychopaths at you. So it's like, okay, I don't know exactly why this is being written. I don't see the point, but the production is very nice. The pacing is very nice. And it's not like gross. It's just like, oh, that's weird. You just made a story entirely out of like, this person's a rapist and this person's a pedophile and this person is like a weird abusive teacher and this person's just insane. And that's just who they are. And it's just supposed to be the drive of the show. The entire reason you're watching is you're trying to figure out how this person ended up pulling off a murder in the past, and what is their relationship to this other crazy person, and is this person crazy because each new episode reveals that a person we thought was normal is actually crazy, that kind of thing. So it's just, I don't know, it's just trash for its own sake, and so I don't, I'm not bothered by it, I'm not offended by it at all. It's just like, I'm not sure why it was made, but it's very well produced, and it's not boring, so... You know, if you like to rubberneck, it's a good show to just be like, all right, this is just garbage. I'm just rubbernecking. Like, what is this schlock? You know, sort of a thing. But it's not offensive or gross or creepy. It's not creepy despite the premise. I don't know why. I think it's just because everyone in it is totally insane. So, you know, I don't know. Check it out if you like weird shit that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, weird dark B movie shit, I guess.
It feels a little. What you describe feels a touch of the, is that it has a touch of the Jonan Vasquez a little?
Well, Jonan Vasquez, Vasquez's stuff is all humorous, and this isn't funny.
Yeah, it not every inch of it, you know, like not every single thing that he's ever made is just comedy. Like,
no, but there's a tongue in cheekness to Vasquez's work, and this is all very, it played straight. It's played straight, but it's not like,
sure.
Oh, look at the horror. It's like,
but
this
I'm
is just the world these characters
there are
live
some
in.
Of, there are some aesthetic and tone juxtapositions here that I think are relevant. That's all.
Totally, yeah.
That's what I meant by that. Yeah.
It's hard to explain. I don't see a whole lot of stuff in this vein. I don't know. It's weird. It would be easier to compare to other anime if it seemed to have a point or a goal. But because it does not yet, the point of the goal is you're going to eventually unravel this mystery. It's like, what is the answer to this whodunit? So that's the entire reason to keep watching. And there's not a whole lot of stuff like that, so, you know.
All right, well, it sounds kind of interesting. Doesn't sound like my kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say just wait to the end, and if it has a point, I would say, like, okay, this is worth watching or not worth watching. But it isn't like... It's not a cross-age type thing. It's not even a school days type of thing. It never seems to revel or take much pleasure. It never seems to revel or take much pleasure in its nastiness. It's just nasty as an aesthetic. So I don't know.
All right, let's roll on to some of these Twitter questions. Okay. All right, here's an interesting question. Matt Norton asks, if you had to pick, which anime do you think would make the best Disney movie? So... We're going from anime, like if you were to adapt an anime as a Disney film.
School Days. No, okay.
Devilman Crybaby.
all right, get all our joke answers out of the way and then think about it.
I mean, thinking about this, like, I don't know, like, something that could be, because in my head when you say that, to me it means a 90s style animated musical. That's
right, which
what
is
means.
which is not what Disney movies are anymore, but
no, but they still make animated musicals. Mm-hmm. That still have the same kind of big-eyed aesthetic.
The easiest answer, because in terms of like, oh, what's the closest to a Disney aesthetic already, is Love Live.
See, that's what I was thinking, like an actual Disney version of Love Live where any remote hint of of it being for otaku at all is completely gone,
right.
And it is instead 100% for a family audience, uh-huh. And it's about a group of girls who chase their dreams.
Yeah.
Maybe, but, like, they would never make that film. Like, they would never make
an all-female, like...
I just couldn't...
Cast of hundreds
I couldn't,
becoming pop stars thing.
Yeah, especially if they did the literally everyone in the world is a woman.
Yeah.
I couldn't see them doing that. Mm-hmm. But that is the closest in, like... I think you're totally right. Like, in the closest in, like, tone and execution and aesthetic, all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's a good one. I mean, like, I could totally see something like the extremely basic. Like, you would have to water this shit down.
Uh-huh.
But you could take, like, Naruto and turn it into, like, a shonen. You could make a boys action cartoon film out of the basic premise of something like Naruto.
Right. Well, they kind of did stuff like that with, like, Big Hero 6 and stuff like that.
Sure, that's just their it would be jump. Like that. It would be like, I don't think it would be good,
yeah,
but it would be like that. But this guy did ask, like, the best.
Mm-hmm. Well, Princess Tutu, right? So that writes itself.
Sure, that would be good.
Mm-hmm. Princess Tutu, I think you don't have to change almost anything. I mean, the art design
if
and
you
stuff
didn't,
like that.
Yeah, actually,
it's
if you
the
took,
same.
It, that would be kind of genius. I think if you took Princess Tutu and, like, fully adapted it to the Disney look and then made it appeal more to, like, you know, the kind of Disney lady, you know, mm-hmm. you'd have a smash. I think you would probably murder with
that.
All
you have to do is cut down the heart shards to, like, specific, like, he has, like, 4 pieces of his heart or something like that, and then... You can get the whole story in there very easily.
Yep.
it's kind of Frozen-esque. It would work.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, totally. And they haven't really... I mean, they've done things with Swan Lake before, but it was in, like, Fantasia, so...
Did they do... What's a Disney Swan Lake? The Swan Princess
Lake,
is the...
I thought Swan Lake was in one of the Fantasia movies, wasn't it?
Oh.
But that doesn't really count. But,
no,
you know.
I thought you meant the picking the story.
Swan Lake, Fantasia is going to murder me if I... Yeah, it's... Well, no, hang on.
Yeah, well, I was thinking they've never taken the story. Because the group that took the story was it Fox that made the Swan Princess and all those million terrible Swan Princess movies? All right, the Swan Princess was distributed by New Line. I don't know who made it exactly.
Oh, yeah, no, the Swan Princess has nothing to do with nothing. I don't know why you're looking that up for.
Because that was the... Because that's the movie that was adapted from the Swan Lake story, a la Princess Tutu.
I don't think Swan...
Disney has not made a Swan Lake kind of movie.
No, they have not, but I was
that
just
was
thinking, wasn't there a Fantasia segment?
That was my
I just
point.
Wanted to get my trivia right.
All
right. Because it would kill me if I got it wrong.
Okay.
But I can't find the... I don't think it was. Mm. Anyway, that's a really good answer, though. I like that.
It's the one you would have to change the least. Like, Love Live is the closest in tone to a Disney film, but in terms of if you're taking the plot outline, the one you would have to change the easiest, absolutely, is Princess Tutu.
Okay. I'm going to go way out on a limb here, mm-hmm. and say that conceptually...
Uh-huh.
I don't think it would resemble the anime as very much at all, but I feel like you could do something with Madoka.
Oh my god.
I feel like you could.
Well, then you might as well just take the kid-friendly versions of Madoka that existed before and after it, rather than Madoka itself, because Madoka is not child-friendly.
Adapting it, though. You're adapting it.
Yeah, but at that point...
You're taking this thing and turning it into something else.
But Madoka was so... such a staple of what came before.
But
and
I'm
after
saying
it.
You could make that, you could do a Disney version of that that would appeal to, like, the Hot Topic 12-year-old
mm-hmm.
who has probably watched Madoka. So
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I feel like you could appeal to the nerdy gothy kids with that kind of thing.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know.
Madoka is definitely the strongest base from which you could adapt, but you would have to change so much that it would be just
oh, totally.
Dark,
everyone would hate
thing.
It. Now, I'm not talking you about know. Things people would be happy about.
Yeah. I'm trying to. I think people could be happy with Princess Tutu. I think Princess Tutu movie would be great.
Yeah, I think people would really. Mm-hmm. Well, no, they would hate that too if it got announced. Like, Disney bought the rights to Princess Tutu and they're remaking it as an animated film. Everyone would be fucking mad. But maybe it would be good.
I don't know. Most Princess Tutu fans I've known are real chill. So I think they would
this
be
would
like,
attract cool. a whole bunch of people who are not actually really Princess Tutu
you're
fans.
You're right, who
but
have
like,
never seen the show before.
But who
like,
want to be like, Disney! Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, okay, fine. I could see being like that, but not like blanket, like I'm just going to come here to complain about
mm-hmm.
about fealty and yeah, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. Aaron Zach Field asks, it was great seeing the two of you post about 2001, A Space Odyssey, and Eyes Wide Shut recently. We went to see 2001, which is in IMAX theaters right now, mm-hmm. and I think what, regular theaters too? Maybe just IMAX? Totally worth seeing in IMAX.
I would say that Stanley Kubrick, he's not the best director in the world or anything, like, because, first of all, that's kind of unfair to say about creators in an art form where diversity is kind of, like, you don't want everything to be the same. There's no, like, one right way to make a movie. But I would say, to me, Kubrick is the best at what he wanted to make. Does that make sense? Like, that nobody else makes the kinds of movies that Kubrick made at the level of aesthetic and accomplishment that he made. Nobody makes the waking nightmares that Kubrick makes as well as he makes them. He was the best at what he did. So, and I do like him a lot as a director. I do like Variety's The Spice. I think that if I want to see a movie that's a little more like human and complex or relevant to the modern day or whatever, or if I want to see something that's a little more grounded and earthy and about human emotions and societal stigmas and, you know, things that are more real life, then Kubrick's not the man to go to. He's like an artisan who creates, like, these perfect dollhouses that you kind of lose yourself in, and you come out of it going, like, all right, how do you process your feelings about this and apply it to something real? Because what you've seen is an illusion, right? That's how I feel about Kubrick. But yeah, like, I like his movies a lot. I've seen 80% of them. I don't think I've seen all of them. And it was really, really hard for me to pick, because after we came back from 2001, Zach was like, what is your favorite Kubrick movie? And I was like, I don't know, because I think it's like a 3- or 4-way tie for the best. Like, I was like, it's really hard for me to pick a favorite, because I feel about the same about all of his, frankly, it was his boring but most well-known ones, Dr. Strange, Love, The Shining. And I was like, you know, I haven't seen Eyes Wide Shut since I was, like, 17, so I should watch it. So we came home, I watched it, and that is easily my favorite Kubrick now. Easily, because it is not like any other kind of movie. 2001, like, it is the best of its kind of movie, but you can think of other movies that are in the same sort of genre space as 2001, right? Where it's like this person's vision of the future and the past and, like, what makes a human. It's like the Tree of Life or something like that. It's a genre of film that really ambitious filmmakers make. I can't really think of another movie quite like Eyes Wide Shut, where it's sexual horror, but it's not, there's no violence, there is no, like, shocking perversion of the naked body or anything like that. It's a sexual horror movie where there is no cheap, gory, gross, like, perversion kind of shock at all. And I don't really want to spoil anything about it other than to say, if you are a horror fan and you like psychological horror, I would say Eyes Wide Shut is one of the best psychological horror movies ever made. And it's just really unique. So that's my favorite now. But he's made a ton of really great movies, so yeah.
Yeah, I think I went through a phase where, you know, I was sort of a cliche film bro-y guy who was like, Kubrick is the, you know, master. But that was when I was like 18 or something, and I was, you know, I also thought Kevin Smith was like a really great director. Which, you know, God love him, but
there's people who still like him.
Yeah, I did love his movies when I was a teenager, but I kind of outgrew it. Like, which isn't to condescend, it's just like that kind of, like, I feel like once I sort of figured out what I like from a director, I knew then, like, oh, this isn't what I'm in for anymore. Like, this isn't what I want.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously the same is not true of you can't, like, Kubrick is, I feel like the conversation around him is dominated by this lofty, like, sort of, well, he was the master, the greatest, you know, whatever. And it's like, nah, he was just a guy with appetites, and he was a really master, like, craftsman. Like, you described his movies this way as, like, being sort of artisanal. Like, they are, like, it's like somebody making a really fine chair, you know, like, this is the finest chair I've ever sat in.
Yeah, it's
like, you know,
like,
what you're going for.
You know, it's some creators pay like a painting or write a story or something like that. And not that he wasn't a good writer, because he was.
Oh yeah.
But like, but I feel like you think of some directors as storytellers. Like, okay, Spike Lee had a movie out, so Spike Lee you think of as a storyteller.
Yeah.
You think as a maverick. Tarantino's a similar way. You think of his voice, right? Kubrick is like a mute like savant who makes this incredible statue, incredible abstract statue that, like, you know, it's the best abstract statue you've ever seen, and it took him 6 years to make, and he didn't say a word the whole time he was making it. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean he's the most brilliant artist who ever lived. It just means he's really good at that kind of art.
Yeah.
That he immerses him, he loses himself in it completely. He comes out the other side, and it means something different to everybody who looks at it. Yeah. You know?
2001's still definitely my favorite. I've seen everything he's made. I don't think, I mean, there's a bunch in there that I don't think I'll like revisit very often or go back to. Like, I'm not going to watch fucking Lolita again, or, frankly, I can't see myself revisiting Dr. Strangelove. I get it. It was groundbreaking political satire at the time, but I don't like love it to pieces.
You don't strange
now.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not, it's fine. It's fine. The in film school, he was there were definitely the guys who were trying to be that guy, who were like, I'm going to be this guy. And it's like, no, you're not.
When I went to film school, everybody was trying to be a Tarantino instead.
Yeah.
I went
one
in the
of the
late,
two.
Late
it was
the
same for me, too. But it was one of the two. But yeah, like as time goes on, I'm sort of interested in the conversation around him just as a person and his art just as stuff that a guy made rather than like, you know, God himself wrote lightning onto film, which is the way he gets talked about by film people. So
it's, and also, please don't romanticize how he like killed himself and his production crew and his actors.
Yeah, it sucked.
Because he was a slave driver both to himself and others, and that is not like, oh, that'll make you an amazing artist. No, he was an amazing artist who happened to work himself really hard. Like, you know what? Eyes Wide Shut, my favorite of his, and he didn't get to remake that one 20 times over the years.
Yeah.
He got his first cut, and that was it, and I still think it's brilliant. So, like, maybe he didn't have to beat himself up to make that sort of stuff. Like, so don't romanticize that aspect of Kubrick, please. We can respect the man and his work without going, like, he knew what real art was because he suffered for it. Like, fuck you.
Yeah. let's see. Mandatory Topic asks, how far did you get? Did you make it into One Piece and Dragon Ball this most recent go round? I made it like probably 20 episodes into Dragon Ball Super, I think. Maybe?
That sounds right. It was like 20 something.
Something like that. I'm going to keep going with it. One Piece, I just kind of caught up to where I knew I had seen, which was something like 60 or 70 episodes in.
Yeah, it was post Chopper.
Yeah, it was after Chopper. And then first I'm going to watch more Dragon Ball and then I will go back to One Piece. I'm not done with either of them. I just haven't quite gotten back to them yet.
I'm giving up on One Piece cause I read Sam's reviews every week and that gets me my One Piece. Like,
So you feel like you're keeping up.
I feel like I understand it, even though I haven't seen more than 50 episodes. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Now I'm definitely into like Dragon Ball stuff catches my eye now. Like I stop and look at it. In the past I was just going to be like, yep, Dragon Ball. Now I stop and look at it. It's interesting. All right. Tom Tificate asks, with the Disney-Fox merger taking effect and giving Disney ownership of Hulu, will that affect Hulu's stance as a large provider of anime? Boy, we don't know yet, now do we? I don't know 100% that Hulu is going to change the strategy like right away. Definitely not. I mean, usually that's not what happens. They don't change their strategy immediately, but I'm sure things will change there once Disney comes in and takes over. They're also starting their own streaming service. So who knows what will happen with Hulu?
Right.
You know, if they own it and they're starting a competing service for TV shows and movies, what? I don't know what's happening. Who knows what they'll do with anime? I have no idea. The future on all that stuff is murky as hell, especially with the Disney Fox thing. Mm-hmm. I have not really even read that much analysis over, like, here's what this might look like, 6 months from now, a year from now. All right. Cowboy Funk wants to know, when will the Super Nerds assemble again? Probably pretty soon. Probably within the next 2 months. Look forward to it. Okay. Tugcoat asks, what are your opinions on the works of Rumiko Takahashi? I heard Jake once mentioning disliking Ranma ½. And wondering if you could go into detail on why.
I just don't really dig her sense of humor. I think that she's an extremely accomplished mangaka, that she's a very creative artist, and that the state of anime comedies and shoujo and stuff like that would not be the same without Inuyasha, Ranma ½, Meizane Koku, all that stuff. So I respect her. I just never really, I don't know, attached very hard to her stories. The type of humor isn't really my thing, And with Ranma 1/2 specifically, one of the big things that put me off was the amount of Chinese racism in the first part of the story is like really difficult to ignore. It's like, whoa, this is just like the islands outside of China racism. And so like, I kind of couldn't get past it, but like, it's fine. It's not really my thing. And Inuyasha, I got really sick of people foisting on me in high school, in middle school, actually. Everybody wanted me to read and watch Inuyasha, and I was just like, I'm just not into this, guys. So, you know.
I love a bunch of Takahashi stuff. I really love Lum. I feel like I've made that pretty clear. But if I'm being totally honest, I mostly love the aesthetic of Lum. I like the way Lum looks.
As an artist, she's extremely like prolific and creative.
Her art is as an artist, I fucking love Rika Takahashi.
Right.
So just as an artist, she is up there with like her watercolors and stuff. Most people probably wouldn't put her on the same shelf as like an Akemi Takada type character, but like in terms of like 80s watercolor look, to me they're on the same shelf. They're definitely on the same shelf. For that particular quality. And I love like Lum in particular, like has just such a specific look to it. But story wise, I do think Lum is funny. I did read all of Maison & Coco and enjoyed it. It's a perfectly fine romance. It goes on for a little too long, but it's very entertaining, and it's just fun. It's like, I hate to describe it this way because it's a comic that I read, but it's just good television. It's just like entertaining TV.
Mm-hmm.
Maison was good, and a lot of the Lum movies are good. Plenty of episodes of the show are funny. I still like it.
Never got into Rinne.
No, her later stuff I don't care about at all. But yeah, it's just because the newer stuff is very kind of generic looking, and Rinne looks like Inuyasha to me, which I didn't care for Inuyasha either because it just didn't look cool enough, and I thought the premise was kind of dull. And I didn't really get into the later stuff, but her 80s and 90s stuff and early 90s stuff, I like all of it. Ranma I'm a little lukewarm on because it's the same. After that old truism about Ranma remains true to this day, I think, where the first season has all of Ranma's jokes in it.
Oh, dear.
And then the 8 seasons following that are those jokes, like, slightly remixed.
Right. I like Ryoga. Ryoga makes me laugh. Like, because his sense of direction
he
is
gets
so
lost all the
terrible.
Time.
But his sense of direction is so terrible that it's cosmic. Because I feel like a lot of other sitcoms, and this is something that Rumiko Takahashi does well, which is take things to 11, but it still feels like a domestic. It ever feels like a fantasy story, but somehow things get taken to like a global weird level. And Ryoga doesn't just get lost. He gets so lost that he ends up in like Canada, and then 2 days later he's in Australia and that kind of thing. So yeah. I was like, all right, I sympathize.
I did a whole episode on Rumiko Takahashi last year, I think, with Dawn. Mm-hmm. So take a look at that. It's in the archive.
Yeah, totally. Do that.
Aim McLeod asks, in today's consumer landscape, is there any way for non-distributors to estimate the sales of physical releases? Is video scan still relevant? Is there a use for this data, or has the focus shifted so far towards streaming that physical sales are a niche afterthought? Well, physical sales are definitely not a niche afterthought for companies that do a lot of physical sales. Uh-huh. Like Funimation still does plenty of physical media business. Discotheque does plenty of physical media business. Viz does plenty of physical media business. Like, all these places are still selling plenty of DVDs. It's just that I think press attention and popular attention and like Twitter attention and pundit attention is all on streaming now. So like the disc sales are much more of an afterthought, I think, to us these days in terms of the discourse. Not to me. I still think about that stuff a lot. But like to a lot of people, and I think the discourse at large, physical media sales, especially U.S. disc sales, seem way less on everyone else's radar.
Right.
Like people just don't really like. We'll get boxes of mail or of screeners in from Funimation where they're putting stuff out from last season, like last year, the year before. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why?
Yeah. We have a copy of Convenience Store Boyfriends waiting to go out.
Yeah, there's a Blu-ray DVD combo pack with a digital code for a digital copy for Convenience Store Boyfriends sitting here. And I'm like, how many of these are they selling?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many of these are they moving?
Hundreds. Mere hundreds.
Probably hundreds. Probably a few hundred.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my estimation. Maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe I'm completely wrong. But yeah, that's So, but at the same time, I wouldn't say that this is a sign that things are going terribly for Funimation, like, because it's not, and I don't know that, and I also don't have any other disc sales. So, like, I think that things are a little, like, stratified now, and like, punditizing on this stuff, like, talking about it, is a little bit more difficult, because I feel like the numbers are more obscured than ever now,
yeah,
in terms of disc sales, specifically in the U.S., so it's kind of hard to get that info. You should attend, like, I know Miles from Crunchyroll does these panels where it's like anime by the numbers, and he just shows you like a lot of different numbers relating to the anime industry, and like that's a good panel to go to if you're interested in this kind of thing. But like, specific sales figures are a thing we still don't and have not ever gotten. And VideoScan, remember, does not include Walmart or Amazon. I don't think it includes Amazon.
Oh, well,
I don't think. I could be totally wrong about that. I should double check it, but... Well, to my knowledge, it doesn't include a lot of major retailers that you would think would shift the needle on that significantly. Mm. So those numbers are kind of like, well, they don't seem totally useless, but like, it's a characterization for sure, but boy, you never know, right? So, yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one. All right, Rosario Robo wants to know, glad to hear you're enjoying Star Blazers 2199. Are there any other anime titles where you miss them entirely or deeply admire that you wish to get the same treatment, like a lavish remake that everyone likes?
Yeah, well, Galaxy Express 3-9 would be a good one.
Yeah, that'd be great. I would love that.
That would be great. Because
Queen Emeraldus would be great, if we're just talking the Matsumoto-verse here.
Yeah, exactly.
I would like a good Cutie Honey. That would be cool.
We didn't get one of those this year. We just got the off-brand Cutie Honey.
I would be down... Okay, so, this is my thing, and go ahead and stop me if you... Well, no, you guys, you can't, because you're listening to this passively, and you can't, like, reach through and stop me.
I will stop you in...
DigiPaint shows that came out in the early 2000s that were really good deserve a 16:9 remake so that they can be proper HD, but also go back and, like, make, like, the perfect version of it. So, like, let's get Wolf's Rain again. Mm-hmm. But, you know, do it exactly how you want to this time. Mm-hmm. Like, with a bigger budget, maybe, and, like... Yeah. In 16:9, and like that would be awesome. Like, I would love that.
Yeah, totally.
You know, hell, I would take a new Witch Hunter Robin. I would take it.
The Witch Hunter Robin? Wow.
I would totally take that. Yeah, like, a lot of that stuff, like, shows from the early 2000s where it's, like, this cruddy old DigiPaint.
Jesus Christ, please make Fruits Basket watch.
Yeah, right? Why isn't there a Fruits Basket remake? You'd think that would be a no-brainer.
I wonder if it's just getting to the banana fish point where they'd have to update the setting, because it is 90s in terms of, like, the technology and the...
But that's not... That wouldn't be that...
It wouldn't be too difficult.
Tough. But, yeah, I mean, I want that treatment for everything that I love, because I always want, like, a higher fidelity version, I guess.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I don't know. It's there's a lot of stuff like
Trigun
that.
Ultimate. Like, I'm just going to break out Fruits Basket and Trigun Ultimate until I'm dead.
Yep. It'll be on your tombstone. It'll be on your tombstone.
It'll be like, where were the remakes? Where were they?
Here Lies Jacob, Fruits Basket, and Trigun.
Never came out. Weep. I'm sure. I think one of those two is going to be made in my lifetime.
Oh, probably Fruits Basket, I would say.
Really? You don't think Trigun has the better shot?
You know what, man? I think we got to get even further out from that movie, which was perceived as a failure.
Exactly. Yeah.
So long as that movie is perceived as a failure, I think they're like, I don't know about Trigun.
Yeah, but Blood Blockade was a big hit, so...
Season 2 a big hit?
It was a moderate hit. Yeah. They lost numbers, but they lose numbers on most Season 2s at this point.
Yeah, that's true. This is true. Okay. Let's see. I mean, and to be perfectly frank, I would really love that for all, like, old giant robot shows, mm-hmm. where the animation is, like, super cruddy, but everyone talks about how much they love it because the story is really good. Mm-hmm. Just do all of them. All that stuff Mike talked. Giant Gorg. Start there. Just start with Giant. Give me a widescreen, nice, glossy update of Giant Gorg.
Don't remix Gundam Wing.
I mean, you could.
I don't want it.
But then, then you have to watch it.
I don't want
to. Then you have to watch it.
Gundam Wing remains one of my most unpleasant viewing experiences for in terms of marathoning an anime. I really didn't like it at all.
Do you want an apology or
no,
something?
No, I'm just, because we're months out, sometimes it's like, oh, you were just bitching about this because of a time or a mood or whatever. But like months out, I'm like, man, I really didn't like Gundam Wing.
Sometimes you're just walking down the street and off, like, in the distance, you hear the beginning of...
Yeah. Well, no, that song is the good thing. Song is the good thing. It's more like I remember the weird circus shit with what's his butt, the amnesiac. Okay.
All right. You walk into a room. You have to either watch all of Gundam Wing again, or you have to watch all of Steins Gate.
Steins Gate. It's shorter. It's shorter.
No, all of it. Which at this point is the
Steins
same
Gate
length.
Zero.
The whole thing.
Shit.
Which one? Which, and the door's locked behind you? There's two stools?
Am I in there alone?
You cannot rules lawyer your way out of it. You have to pick one of these.
Am I in there alone, or are there other people?
You're in here alone. You just have to sit and watch it alone.
Can I fall asleep?
No, quit trying to get out of it. You have to pick one of these two.
I would literally tally up the runtime and see which one is shorter by an hour.
By minutes, you would figure out exactly.
If it's close to 40 minutes to an hour, I'll pick the one that's shorter. If they're literally the exact same length, jeez.
It's not even a contest. I would take Gundam Wing immediately.
You know what? I will take Gundam Wing because
I could sit there and try to like get my head around it.
Yeah, because a bunch of stuff happens. So I wouldn't be like,
and it's not boring.
I wouldn't be like, only 5 minutes have passed and they're still talking. It would be 5 minutes have passed and there have been five scenes I hate. But at least they were all completely different.
And you're like,
so
okay.
I can take Gundam Wing.
Okay, so you pick up Gundam Wing off and the other thing disappears and you sit down and put it in and then the theme song starts for the first episode and you're like
Yeah. I'm like, here we go. But no, you know what? I would definitely take it over. If I had to watch Steins Gate Zero, I mean, like, I can't.
Okay.
I'm watching it this season, and I'm like, never again.
Okay. Akila Montato asks, when are you getting back to video? When I can reliably do it week after week without needing to constantly take breaks because we don't really have time to set the whole thing up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a... I really kind of need a producer for that.
Exactly.
It's hard to do that with the two of us, and one of us has to be producing the show while we're also taping it and also producing it live. Like, it's just a lot, and I need the show to be relatively easy to produce. I would really like to get back to it, and it's still there. Like, I still want to do it, but it would take either an extra staff member or... Some extra resources or something in order for us to go back to it in a major way. I do want to go back to it, though. I did like doing it. Okay, Land of Obscusion asks, so now that G Gundam has a release date set, are there any plans for an Ancast about it? I'm thinking about it. I don't know if I would do that to Jacob, though.
G Gundam's the silly one, right?
Presumably.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the ending, so I've spoiled on how it ends. But I don't have a problem watching G Gundam. Look, Gundam Wing, according to our resident Gundam expert, Lauren Orsini, Gundam Wing is one of the more insufferable ones to have to sit through. So I, you know, she said G Gundam's a hoot. I've never not heard G Gundam's a hoot. I don't have any problem with watching that.
Yeah, well. All right, then. Cool. Well, looks like you set yourself a date with G Gundam. Nick Hoffrog asks, what 90s show is the most due for a remake, a reboot, or a sequel?
90s. Well, we already answered this.
We did kind of answer it already.
Fruits Basket and Trigun. I'm just.
Well, your answers for that question just happen to be also 90s shows.
Yeah, but I'm just going to brand it on my forehead because we get this question quite
You
a
just
bit.
Need a laminated card. It says Fruits Basket and or Trigun.
Yeah, exactly. And I just hand it out to people when they ask that question.
Okay. All right. Pick 15 asks, in your opinion, is the free season 3 letdown more due to execution issues or something more fundamental, like there being less demand for its chaste Ken doll sensibility in a post Yuri on Ice world?
I don't think that's true at all. Look at the popularity of idol anime, which is the same appeal. So, like, the chaste, like, cute boy on a 13-year-old girl's wall appeal of various types of anime is not going anywhere. I think Free Star has fallen because I think they wrung it a little dry. I think they made too much. They were two recap movies and a third movie that they hyped up a lot and just turned out to be four kind of inconsequential OVAs. There was the prequel movie. They've just wrung it dry. And then the third season, which they were really hyping up for a long time, is not fun. It's not fun at all. In fact, so I just watched the newest episode today, and I was laughing my ass off because they spent seven straight episodes building up this conflict of, like, Haru had this falling out with Ikuya in middle school, which is something you're only going to know about if you saw that movie. And now he's in college, and everybody's in college, and they're all across the world, and they're still just concerned with this one thing that happened to the one character in middle school. And then they resolved it in this episode by just, like, they swam against each other. Like, at the last minute, Haru decided to sign up for the same race that Ikuya was in. And while they're swimming, they don't talk or anything. It's just, while they're swimming, Ikuya suddenly has, like, an entire therapy session in his head where he forgives Haru for everything. And he's like, the way he swims just inspires me, and I realize that I actually do love him. And then they get to the end and just, like, cry and hug and make up. And it was like, what? You spent all that time angsting, and then they just get in the water with one another once. They swim one lap, and he's over all his issues. And now the focus is on who's going to win the tournament. It is the laziest, laziest thing I've ever seen. And not only that, Ikuya's best friend, who is an asshole and who was the antagonist up to this point, does the same thing right after him. The next race is Haru racing against Ikuya's friend. I don't remember his name. And the same thing happens where he does the, it's just copy and paste. He does one lap of swimming, and this whole time he's undergoing this, like, long therapy session in his head, thinking about how great Haru is and how much, like, oh, he was wrong and all this other stuff. And then he gets to the end and he's, like, sad and then makes up with him, and they're all friends again. So it was literally wasting your time for 7 episodes, resolving it in the laziest possible way in 8. And then I guess 9, 10, 11, and 12 are going to be, like, more tournament style, happy fun times, who's going to win nationals. I don't give a fuck. Like, it's bad, is my point. This is really bad writing. It's animated quite well, but my gosh, it's just extremely lazy. So yeah, I think Freeze Star, if anything, has kind of fallen because they just overdid it. They overdid it, and they didn't have good ideas. And it's like, you gotta wait till you got good ideas to put out there before you're like, more boys, buy more boys. Filling the pool with more boys is not the solution, you know?
Okay, all right. AngelXL3 wants to know, should I expect better treatment for the lead female characters in My Hero Academia? For example, getting more screen time or being involved in major arcs or getting fleshed out characterizations? No.
It's standard Shonen Jump stuff, which means that you count the Shonen Jump shows that have, like, great female character writing. That it's not the norm, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common complaint about My Hero Academia. Mm-hmm. When I said that I was interviewing the creator of that, which we did, the interview's up on the site now, a lot of people brought that up as a thing. They're like, oh, you know, I like that show, I love that show, but... And that's their chief complaint. And I don't know, I think that guy should probably listen to the people telling him, like, hey, maybe the ladies in this should get a little bit more spot. Like, it's a big sprawling story. You don't have to just focus completely on the male characters.
Well, the female characters do get focused, they just don't do interesting things. He can't figure out what to do. Like, Uraraka gets plenty of screen time, but that screen time is spent wondering if she has a crush on Deku.
Well, I think that's what they mean.
Exactly. And it's like, oh, well.
Yeah, we're not just standing around talking about the boys.
You know, Naruto was the same way. That was the reason I couldn't get into Naruto, for the most part, was just like, you have this cast of female characters you're just not doing anything interesting with.
Mostly stand around to get married.
Yeah, stand around and get married. And My Hero Academia is a little better than... It's actually, I would say, significantly better at this than Naruto was. But you know, it has that shortcoming.
Let's see here. Todd Dubois asks... Maybe it got asked, but looking back, what's the greatest or most fondly remembered AnCast episode? That's a good question.
Oh, man.
Whoa. I liked a lot of the live shows that we've done. I really liked the Best of the Decade shows that we did a long time ago that I kind of want to do again. I kind of want to redo those shows. Like, update those. That would be a lot, though.
It would be a lot.
It would be a lot, but I feel like we could do it. Yeah, I would say those are my favorites. I wish we could do more live stuff. That would be a lot of fun. Let's see. Zinky asks...
Well, I wanted to answer that.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I think most of my favorites are the series discussions.
Oh, yeah.
Any given series discussion where we have I mean, some have been better than others, I guess, but I don't really want to single one out because it's like me and Zach usually have different feelings on a show when we've watched 26 episodes of it, and then our guest adds another dynamic. So I don't know. I remember those very fondly.
Yeah, we got more of them coming up. There's more coming. We like have triple promised to watch Higurashi for Halloween.
So yeah, I'm excited. I haven't seen it in years.
Well, we got to come up with one for September. Mm-hmm. So we'll do one. We'll do one this month, and we'll do Higurashi next month. Mm-hmm. And okay, so that's two coming up.
Yeah,
this month, Gundam Wing.
Why?
Just kidding. Ziggy asks, which summer convention is ANN's busiest in general? Anime Expo.
Yeah. Yes.
CC Takato asks, is Devilman Crybaby still the best anime of the year, or do you think any other anime series since its airing has topped it? Nope, still the best.
Still the best. Maybe something from fall will top it, but I highly doubt it.
I highly doubt it.
Yeah. It's funny because the...
Getting into
the
little Edwin there.
Yeah.
I don't think, though.
It was funny because it was the first anime I finished this year, and I was like, I think this is the first time this has happened. The first thing I saw this year is going to be the best thing I see all year. And so far, still there. So we'll see, but, you know.
Yeah, I still think about Devilman Crybaby all the time. Mm-hmm. I still... Like, I wanted to import the Blu-ray box set that comes with the LP and the all
thinking about
stuff.
That Crybaby.
Still thinking about that Devilman Crybaby. Mm-hmm. I'll never shut up about it. And I'm old, too, so I'll really never shut up about it.
We now own two cells from the Devilman, the third OVA.
Yeah, I bought the OVA Blu-ray, the OVA Blu-ray at Otakon. I still have not had time to sit down and watch it. I'm really dying to see it sitting there next to the TV. I look at it every day, and I'm like, maybe today's the day.
Maybe today.
Yeah. Speaking of Go to Guy, those original Cutie Honey comics came out. You should get them. Mm. It's a beautiful book.
Yep.
All right, last question from Definitely Jeff. Looks like we're about to hit a wave of next era Shonen Jump anime adaptations in the coming seasons. Hinamaru Zumo, which is a sumo wrestler one, in October. Promised Neverland in January, and Yaiba in spring. Are any of those currently on your radar?
Yeah, everybody and their brother has been telling me to get into Promised Neverland, and I'm like, I'm waiting for it to be animated, guys. Waiting for it.
Yeah, once I read the premise of that, I became less interested. It didn't sound that interesting to me. Mm-hmm. But I will watch the show. We'll see. Yaiba, I've heard about. I will probably watch an episode of it, but I wouldn't. The sumo one I am not familiar with at all, but I'm curious. We'll see.
I tell you what, in the anime world we live in, like, you really can't count on the anime adaptation to be a gateway necessarily, because you don't know if it's going to be good or not, because we've had some Golden Kamuys and we've had some Black Cloverses and stuff like that like draw out the content and don't have very good animation enough to, like, you know, even if it seemed like it was going to be interesting, you can't sit through it. So like, I'm excited about Promised Neverland, but if it gets like a bum anime adaptation, like, you know, oh,
yeah,
well.
if it's not.
I ain't the reading type, so I don't read a whole lot of manga. No, I
know what you mean.
I enjoy reading, but I don't read a lot of manga. I'm reading two manga right now, and that's it. And
they're both Fruits Basket. One's the Tokyo Pop one. The other one's the
No, that's not what I meant, but that's true. I have been comparing the translations of Fruits Basket chapter by chapter on Twitter, so that's fun. What I meant was Attack on Titan and To Your Eternity are the two that I'm reading.
Oh, right. I'm behind on To Your Eternity.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm just not a heavy manga reader, so, like, I hope the anime adaptation's good, because I probably won't make time for the manga. Even Golden Kamuy, I've yet to read it, even though I was like, this is great. Wish it was not poop animation, and then, you know, or Osoma animation, as
I don't know. I don't know what the next big thing is. Mm-hmm. Boruto, it's popular, but it's not like, holy shit, everyone cares about Boruto.
I think it's everybody's watching it like they're watching The Walking Dead. It's just there.
Dragon Ball Super is done, right?
It's been done. The movie is Broly coming back.
And that's the end?
I don't know.
Probably not. Certainly not the end.
Certainly not.
If, like, every single villain is going to come back.
Yeah.
Although now I'm excited because I can watch that movie.
Yeah.
I can, like, just watch it and I'll know.
But you don't know what happens in the Tournament of Power.
Well, I'm going to get there.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to get there.
I kind of want to watch
the old ones, too. Like, they're putting the old ones in theaters. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to see those.
Maybe F is for Frieza.
You may have to go see him. Seems good. I don't know. Yeah, the Dragon Ball is kind of in my head. It's taken hold, I think.
Cool.
I feel as though I'm becoming a fan.
I definitely enjoy it more. I enjoy Toriyama's, because I watched a ton of DBZ as a kid, or I would say as a young teen, because I had friends who were into it, but I just couldn't get into it. But I would say Dragon Ball Super, I kind of got it. I think I really like Toriyama's sense of humor and his aesthetic. Maybe I should watch the original Dragon Ball instead, because DBZ, like the super serious, brrr, like slow paced, serious, like, and the blood and then Yamcha explodes, like, didn't really do anything for me. But I like Beerus, and I like married Vegeta, and I like that sensibility. So, you know, Super, I think, is working for me.
Yeah, Super is the thing that seems to have turned me around, but it also seems to have woke, like, now that I get it, I feel like I get it. And I'm not really interested in going back and watching original Dragon Ball Z. I might watch Kai, maybe, but I'm enjoying Super, and that's enough for me now, mm-hmm. for now. And I'll probably watch the Super movies, like the Battle of Gods and Resurrection, whatever, the Resurrection F. Mm-hmm. I'll probably watch those, and I'll watch this new movie. But we'll see where it goes from there. I might watch the original Dragon Ball, too. It's a whole world I get to dig into.
So much Toriyama.
Yeah, there's a lot. All right, man. Let's wrap it up.
All right.
All right. Hey, we'll see you at Crunchyroll Expo, right? And also next week.
Mm-hmm.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's our show. Theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, on Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, all that stuff. Leave us comments and reviews and star ratings and those things. You know, it helps us out. Thanks a lot. We'll see y'all next week.